John White, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. He certainly is certainly one of the most outstanding trainers I've ever been around. And this was yet another tremendous training job on the part of Richard Mandela, although, as he is fond of saying, the credit really should go to Omaha Beach, which certainly a lot of the credit should go to Omaha Beach, who is an absolutely, you know, special coach. There's no question about it. In fact, you've raised the parallels with Precisionist, one of my all-time favorites. And I think there's a lot in common between the two, no question about it. By the way, you know, a commercial that you frequently play is for the old friends, and you hear the call of Afternoon Delights. And, of course, Richard Mandela trained Afternoon Delights. So we hear constantly on your show the call of a Hollywood fraternity victory by Afternoon Delights in his third career start. And Afternoon Delights headed into the Kentucky Derby with only one loss, that being a photo finish defeat in the Santa Anita Derby. He finished eighth in the Kentucky Derby that was won by Thunder Gulch, ridden by Gary Stevens, trained by Dwayne Lucas. And then Afternoon Delights went on the shelf. Tell me this doesn't sound a little familiar. Afternoon Delights, having not started since the Kentucky Derby on the first Saturday in May, did not race again until the Malibu Stakes, a 7-furlong race, on December 26th, opening day of the Santa Anita meet. And lo and behold, Afternoon Delights rallied and won the Malibu Stakes by 2 lengths. So, in other words, this isn't the first time Richard Mandela has exhibited this kind of training magic to do what he did with Omaha Beach. I got a big kick out of his comment that he's said that I only had basically 2 weeks to make him a sprinter. That's pretty good. And one thing that could help Omaha Beach going forward in terms of which of the three Breeders' Cup options he could use, typically when a horse comes off a layoff and runs in a 6-furlong race like the Santa Anita Sprint Championship, they've been trained up to that 6-furlong race with that 6-furlong race as the target. This was not the target. This was the backup plan. And therefore, Richard Mandela, you know, had Omaha Beach ready, really, to run like a mile. So he's got a lot of foundation under him even prior to this 6-furlong victory. The clock is rather against him, of course, for the Classic. But if there's any trainer that could pull this off, and I had texted a friend of mine before the Santa Anita Sprint Championship, and I had said, you know, this probably won't happen, but I sure would like to see it, have a chance. And that would be for Omaha Beach to win the Santa Anita Sprint Championship and then go into the Breeders' Cup Classic. Because I think he could win the Breeders' Cup Classic. There's no, to me this year, a gun runner, no American Pharoah, no California Chrome, no Arrogate. You know, this is, at this point, and, you know, that's with respect. I mean, I respect McKenzie, and I love Vino Rosso and Code of Honor. We really don't know how good he really is. We're just kind of scratching the surface. But as far as going into the Breeders' Cup Classic, I mean, I personally would rather run in the Breeders' Cup Classic than run against Mattoli in the sprint, for instance, because Mattoli is an absolute beast. And if you can't quite make the Classic, then I would, I would opt for the Dirt Mile. I think that's a better option than running against Mattoli. But, Steve, you had yet another one of your very good interviews with Mr. Mandela yesterday, and you elicited the response from him that if the decision were today, meaning yesterday, they would run him in the sprint. So that's pretty interesting. And, you know, I can't overly argue with that since he just won a sprint on that same track. But to run against Mattoli and Chancelot and some of the, you know, Imperial Hint and some of these horses, I mean, that sprint, you've heard Andy Serling talk about it, and I think it's true that the sprint could turn out to be maybe the best overall Breeders' Cup race that we have.
Did we lose John? No, I think we did. I think that's a Yeah, Dave, you lost him? Lost John. He's there. All right, Deja thinks he's there. John, you better pick up on him because he's... Because I'm not hearing him, so... I was a little surprised yesterday when Mandela said that right now his lean is the sprint. That surprised me a little bit for the same reasons. Although the way he won, you would have to think, as nice as the rest of that field is going to be. And of course, Mattioli doesn't necessarily need the, has shown that he doesn't have to have the lead, but the way he won Saturday, Omaha Beach, he can sit off the pace and come with the run. So I can understand why they're thinking that way, and he'll be that much tighter. John is back with us. We lost you there, John, for a minute.
Yeah, Steve. I mean, it's more typical to get a call drop when I'm using my cell, but I always, when I'm home, I want to use my landline because that's the more reliable phone. So it shows you, you just never know. One other thing I wanted to point out about Omaha Beach that I think is absolutely extraordinary is he's done something that I've not seen another horse do. Maybe there is another one out there. Dick Girardi probably would be the one to ask about this, but Omaha Beach has run 8 times now, and by the way, he lost his first 4 career starts. Now he's won 4 in a row, so that's rather unusual. You don't really see that too often, where a horse starts off 0-4 and then now has reeled off 4 straight wins. But he got a 62 buyer speed figure at his career debut a little more than a year ago at Del Mar on the turf. And from that 62, his buyers have been 78, 80, 83, 90, 96, 101, 103. He's improved his buyer every single time he has gone out there. That's one of the most just remarkable buyer figures in terms of the pattern I have ever seen.
Yeah, and it's a testimony to Mandela and his handling. I mean, that just and you can understand why the people who, back in the winter and heading into spring were so excited about him and by him, and why they're, given what everything else has gone on with the 3-year-olds. I mean, why there's people that are trying to build a case for him. As a potential 3-year-old champion, pending everything else that goes on, and no matter what, it's just nice. I mean, when you get horses of this quality back to the races, that it's just a positive. People get frustrated with retirements, and we've had that discussion, but getting this horse back and having him come back and win. Because I got to say, John, I did not think that he needed to win. I just thought, get him back, as you said, get him back and just get a tightener and use it as a launching point. But the fact that he gets up and wins. And I'll tell you who was very good. As great as Gosden was on Sunday with the Nables, frustrating near miss. George Navarro was I think as stunned as anybody, and he was very gracious too, and just paid tribute immediately to Mandela and to the horse as well. I thought it was a good moment for Navarro in defeat.
And Navarro, I thought, was very smart here. And again, I brought this up on your show recently, but this is very important vis-a-vis the Breeders' Cup coming up. And a great example of this is the Pacific Classic this year, where the horses from the east came out to Del Mar and struggled on that slower Del Mar track. The horses that have been shipping into Southern California from New York have not done too well. And Navarro was smart. He got Chancelot out here, trained him at Santa Anita, even got a good sharp workout under his belt, 47 and change. And I think that had a lot to do with Chancelot running as well as he did. In other words, if Chancelot had just been one of those that shows up at the last minute and runs in the race, I would have felt that that would have been a pretty good... I wouldn't have expected him to run as well as he did. So I think Navarro was very smart in the way he handled Chancelot to get him out here. Steve Asmussen is being very smart about that. To have Mattoli and some of these other horses here for the Breeders' Cup, this is very important. I think an extremely important consideration when you look at these Breeders' Cup races on the dirt, not for the turf, but for the dirt at Santa Anita. When are these horses going to show up at Santa Anita? And I'm going to certainly feel that it's going to be something to overcome for the horses showing up at the last minute. So that's more than I can remember in recent times. That's going to be an aspect for horse players to consider. So you're right, Steve. I mean, I thought Chancelot just ran a tremendous race, really, and I know people now keep expecting him to go out and run another 121 buyer speed figure, but heck, you know, this horse, as a three-year-old, he's like two photo finishes away from being undefeated, and Ben Amsterdam, yeah, he got a 121, but the time of that race was very good, but the way he just, that was just one of those jaw-dropping performances, and he is just a very special three-year-old colt in his own right. Speaking especially, I did want to pay tribute to one of my favorites, World of Trouble. I'm sorry that he's being retired, but boy, what a career he's had, and just, you know, I was such a fan of his. I mean, for him to win a race like the Carter, a grade one race on the dirt, and to also be a grade one winner on the turf, you don't see too many of those grade one winners on turf and dirt. And that race he ran last year as a three-year-old in the Breeders' Cup turf sprint against Stormy Liberal, that's got to be one of the greatest performances in defeat we've seen, you know, in American racing in like the last decade, where he got a 1-8. How many times do you go out and run a 118 buyer and get beat?
Yeah. No, that was one of the best races of the year, obviously, last year. And Stormy Liberal still trying to fine-tune himself. Let's actually talk about some of the other races from the weekend, John, and go back to Saturday beside Omaha Beach. And let's actually go early on the card. And one race I really haven't discussed at all, other than alluding to Baltus and Drayden Van Dyke, and nice to see Drayden Van Dyke back 100% and winning with alacrity, and that included the Grade 3 L.A. Woman, Lady Ninja, and I don't know, Selcourt. You did hear about anonymity with Mandela yesterday. You could tell he was very disappointed with her effort, and that he didn't, you know, that was, you want to hear old school? Mandela saying, it's hard for me to go forward to the Breeders' Cup off an effort like that. I mean, that's the real thing when you hear that.
Certainly is, and I know that John Sadler was disappointed that Selcourt didn't win, but he was also proud of her because, again, considering what we've seen from in terms of the times on this slowed down Santa Anita track, for her to go out there and go 21 and change, 44 to the half, and at 6.5 furlongs in her first race since March, lose by a whisker. I mean, she ran too good to lose, and that was really actually a big effort on her part, especially going 6.5 rather than like 6. But Lady Ninja is really quite a story. She was a $32,000 claim about a little over a year ago, and Baltus has had just, you know, he's continuing more and more to build that stable into a real powerhouse. And a lot of people were of the opinion that if Lady Ninja in the Rancho Bernardo at Del Mar had not broken as poorly as she did, and she broke really poorly that day. I mean, she it was her race was really over at the start. She broke in the air and was off well behind the field and came flying to finish third. A lot of people were of the opinion with a decent start, she would have won that race, and that opinion was validated by the fact that she comes back and does win the L.A. Woman. So congratulations to those connections, and as I say, even though Silcourt didn't win, Silcourt to me has been kind of the sprinting vision of Paradise Woods in terms of I never know which Silcourt's going to show up. I mean, she can run some brilliant races, and then she can really run some clunkers. And here was a case where Silcourt didn't run a clunker, and she still got beat, but like I say, only by a whisker.
Now, Lady Ninja follows up her her placement in the Rancho Bernardo. Behind Danuska's My Girl and Anonymity, and wins a graded stake. And Baltus, you know, Baltus has done his typical good job. I mean, this is a horse that the current owners claimed for 32, and, you know, just incremental, you know, kind of got spoon-fed, a couple of allowance tries, then they dropped her back for 25. Nobody took her. I mean, when you see a horse drop back down below the claim price, that, you know, that's usually a time to, you know, to strike if you want to take it back, or, you know, if you want to bet anyway. And was 2-1, wasn't favored, you know, then Baltus got back busy, you know, trying her in an allowance, back up the ladder to 40, where she wins. And once she won that 40 claimer, it almost seems like something like a light went on a little bit. And as she, you know, she is a 5-year-old mare, so she's fully mature now. And her last 4 or 5 starts have just gotten better and better. And now she's a graded stake winner. Unbelievable.
I remember encountering Baltus one morning at Santa Anita prior to the start of the winter spring meet, and I was walking a few paces behind him, and he turned around and he says, "Oh, good morning." And I said, "Good morning." And the first thing he said to me was, "You know, Baffert's got all the good horses." I thought, that's an interesting way to start a conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
And exactly. As Baltus has piled up these wins this year, you know, left and right, and the first thing I said to him after he said that was, "Look, you got a lot of good horses over there yourself, and you're doing darn good job with them." So, feel like he's let me down by making that statement with what he's accomplished this year. I mean, he really does a terrific job, and you know, his results speak for themselves.
Well, and one of the things that is notable, you know, you look here. Let's talk about the City of Hope, and you know, Neptune Storm, he sends out of town, and I don't know if they necessarily would have considered, you know, going the mile with Neptune Storm, but, you know, there was 3-year-old Kingley in here facing Elders. This was one of the best of all the races from the weekend, John. This was one of the best races that nobody has talked about. And if people haven't seen the City of Hope Mile, pull it up, because not that any of these are necessarily going to be, you know, beating bricks and mortar or Uni or whatever comes from Europe, but this was a really good race. And True Valor, a terrific ride by Drayden Van Dyke, Simon Callahan, and Qatar Racing Limited, Restrained Vengeance at a monster price under Martin Garcia for Val Brinkerhoff. What a win that would have been. Here's Prince Earl, who we cashed on earlier in the summer. And Kingley, actually, you know, you could tell Kingley was going to get overwhelmed late, but very credible. In some ways, maybe his best turf try to date.
I think it was for Kingley. You know, you mentioned, I mean, when you look at the finish of that race, it looks like the finish of a 350-yard quarter horse race. I mean, you talk about a blanket finish. How about Synchrony? Synchrony finished eighth. He got beat a length and a half. That means eight horses were within a length and a half at the finish. And to show you how Synchrony ran well, he got a 97 buyer. That matched the buyer he got in the Woodbine Mile when he was running against the likes of Get Stormy there. So you know, Michael Stidham shipped him in, and the horse ran well, and yet he had to settle for eighth. Prince Earl backed up the good performance in the Delmar Mile by being right there in this race as the favorite. It was a very tough race to make the morning line on, and I settled on Prince Earl as the favorite, and he did go off as the 5-2 favorite in the race. And Restrained Vengeance, you talk about a real friend of the long shot bettors and a couple of extremely tough defeats for him. In the Long Acres Mile, he ran his tail off that day at 26-1 and was right there at the finish with Law Abiding Citizen from the Mark Lap Barn, and then he Port in a Storm, the favorite, who had been winning left and right at Emerald Downs for trainer Richard, for trainer Blaine Wright. And then Restrained Vengeance goes up to Golden Gate, wins the Rolling Green, and wins it impressively as the favorite. And then again, he's a huge price, as you pointed out, 43-1 in the City of Hope Mile, and gets beat ahead in this race against a very tough group. So, wow, I mean, I've really kind of become a fan of this Restrained Vengeance. I remember when I was doing picks for your website, and I had him, when he won the Oceanside at Del Mar, I had him on a ticket as a long shot play, and he came through that day at 11-1. So, like I say, Restrained Vengeance has been a real fan, friend of the long shot players. And Simon Callahan, you know, he is another one of our trainers that just, you know, day in, day out, week in, week out, month in, month out, year in, year out, does a good job. And True Valor here, coming off a layoff, rolls to the occasion, runs a big race, 16-1 he is. And he was a horse that I had mentioned to you, I hated making him over, you know, under, not having him under 10-1, and I really tried to make him 8, and I ended up making him 10. He went off at 16 and gets the victory here, and that's back-to-back wins at the mile distance on the turf at Santa Anita for him, because he had won that Thunder Road before he went on the sidelines. So, like you say, I mean, it's to say the water's going to get deeper in the Breeders' Cup Mile is, you know, to say the least. But still, that, as you point out, Steve, you said it going into the race, and it's true coming out of the race. That City of Hope Mile was a fun race.
Well, same with the swing time, and in this case, it's the 3-5 favorite Toinette, and I was reaching around for, you know, Tiny Tina and some other prices, and it wasn't to be. But Toinette is such a nice horse, and one of the best stories the last couple of years has been the barn of Neil Drysdale being restocked, and I've seen every sale I go to the last year and a half, I see Drysdale. So they're buying, and he's plying the trade. A guy that never forgot how to train, as they say.
That's for sure. And this is a very nice Scat Daddy filly, and even in defeat in the J.C. John C. Mabee at Del Mar, I mean, she was facing the Wind Machine Vasilika there and didn't disgrace herself on that occasion. And, you know, this was a race that she's supposed to win as an odds-on favorite, and she won it, and she won it stylishly. One of my favorite moments this year was being on with you there at Clocker's Corner, and you had Neil Drysdale on that morning, and so we were on together, and I remember mentioning on your show that morning, don't forget, Neil Drysdale, in one of the great training achievements to me of my lifetime, what he did with Princess Rooney and the race she ran in the first Breeders' Cup Distaff at Hollywood Park in 1984, and that's back when the Distaff was a mile and a quarter. Her time was way faster than Wild Again's in the Classic. There are very few fillies and mares that ever lived that could have beat Princess Rooney that day. And I remember I was a reporter and columnist with the Racing Form at that time, and in the spring, after Drysdale had first gotten Princess Rooney, I remember walking back to his barn through the stable area one morning, and we were chatting about Princess Rooney, and he said something to me that I'll never forget, and he said, John, everything I do with this filly between now and this first Breeders' Cup is with the goal of having her at her absolute peak on Breeders' Cup Day. And, boy, you talk about a guy that just hit the target spot on by what he said. It was like April or, you know, March that he said that. And, boy, in November, as I say, the race, go to YouTube and watch Princess Rooney in that first Breeders' Cup distaff. And you, if your, you know, eyes don't pop out, then you really I'll be surprised.
Well, and that you heard that yesterday in the conversation with Nacho Correas, where Correas said point blank, everything that we did this year was designed to have her peak for the Spinster, to try to win the Spinster again. And damn if, you know, they don't do it. And, you know, it's one of the things that, you know, accomplished the horsemen on a regular basis. Circle a date and work, you know, backward. Talk about Sunday, John. And actually, before we talk about Sunday, I do have to mention one win that was early on the card. And I was happy to see Parsimony finally break his maiden. This is the over 17 maiden who had already made $156,000, despite being over 17.
You know, actually got a little bit of flack from a friend of mine saying that, why are you making him 3-1 on the morning line? Because he was coming back quick off a disappointing race. And, you know, with all these losses that he's had, you know, he was really questioning why I made him that low. And the reason I made him low is, and I, you know, I've learned this by listening and following these Sheets players and the Thoroughgraph and the Ragazin people. One thing I've learned is it's important to go back. If you're switching surfaces, go back to the most recent race that a horse has run on, you know, whether it's dirt or turf. And if you go back to the last dirt race for Parsimony, that was in the Los Alamitos Derby. I was in the steward stand that day, and I can remember having my binoculars on him, and he actually gave Game Winner a pretty good run for his money that day as a maiden. So that was still fresh in my mind, and I thought, you know, with the switch back to the dirt, that is something that you better not take him too lightly in here, even though he ran a disappointing race last week. And lo and behold, he finally did get that elusive maiden diploma.
Well, there's a couple. That was a group of three and ups that were expected to break their maidens already, and that includes One Nation and Stretford End, the latest soccer-related Kaleem Shah runner. Stretford End is one of the sides at Old Trafford, the Man U Stadium. Stretford End, I think, was expected to do something good. Silenced also is another one. That's the Peter Erton.
By the way, Stretford Ends by Will Take Charge and Omaha Beach. You know, the dam is a half to Will Take Charge.
Yeah, and John, let's quickly get in. We've got about 3 minutes, and we can get the Sunday results in as well. And we're not going to get to Jeremy today, which is too bad, but we'll get the rest of the Keeneland in tomorrow. The prices that came careening on Sunday, including the Nightcap. How about Craig Lewis and the Warrens? Warrens Showtime, the longest price on the board by $15, unbelievable, 35-1. And you also had the 24-1 El Tigre Terrible, and this a Peter Miller trainee for Slam Dunk. Big upset there. Not the longest price on the board, but still a big price. And the turf was the key in the Speakeasy. And what was the third stake? I'm missing one of the three stakes.
The Zuma Beach.
The Zuma Beach. And by the way, I understand there was no surfboard trophy given out, and that is inexcusable. Hit the Road, your winner there. And Dan Blacker gets his first stake win at Santa Anita.
Well, Warren Showtime and El Tigre Terrible, both cowbreds, so they stepped up to win here in Open Company as cowbreds. And listen, I will say one thing to your horse players out there, and you've got a lot of them. Better start really paying attention to these offspring of Clubhouse Ride, because he looks like he might be the next unusual heat that we have here in California. His offspring are really running well, and it's not that surprising because Clubhouse Ride is a candy ride, and therefore he's kind of got the license to maybe do quite well as a sire. And Warren Showtime, Craig Lewis, who did such a fantastic job back in the day with a horse called Cutlass Reality, who, when I was a chart caller for the racing form, won an edition of the Hollywood Gold Cup in which he absolutely buried two Kentucky Derby winners, Ferdinand and Ali Sheba. I mean, he won by like six and a half lengths that day. It just left them reeling in his wake. And Craig Lewis trained the Clubhouse Ride, who was a multiple grade two winner. And Craig was on Mike Willman's radio show here, Thoroughbred Los Angeles, on Sunday morning, and was asked about Warren Showtime. And he said, look, she had such a troubled trip last time out, and she did. It was an absolute nightmare trip in the Del Mar Juvenile Fillies turf. And he said, look, this is a tough spot. I know that. But he says that she's been training great, and believe me, I think she's going to run a big race today. And a lot of trainers would say that, and I wouldn't pay much heed to that. When Craig Lewis says something like that, that means something to me. And boy, lo and behold, she goes out there and pulls off the upset at 35-1 in a six-horse field. It wasn't like that was a 10, 11, 12-horse field. That's a six-horse field that she was dismissed at 35-1.
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Happy. And you know, and there's another. I wanted to reach out to Craig Lewis about maybe 2 weeks ago, and I think maybe he had a winner at Los Al, but maybe in a Calbred stake. There was some other reason I was going to reach out to Craig, and very pleased for him to pop like this. And the Surfer Girl, you know, what do we have so far in the juvenile turf arena? Let's see what happens in both of these, and of course the juvenile sprint. John, I appreciate this. This was great. We got pretty much everything covered from the weekend at Santa Anita, and now we got to start to get ready for the Express Bet Breeders' Cup wagering guide that we'll participate in.
Yeah, we got to roll up our sleeves and really hunker down, start crunching the numbers for the Breeders' Cup.
We'll talk next week. John White, everybody. Post Time John, and racing coming back at Santa Anita on Thursday. A lot of places aren't running tomorrow because they're going to run on Monday on the holiday. They're going to get started in a matter of minutes. They'll be reading the conditions of sale at the Ocala Breeder Sales Company. OBS starts now. Racing action. They are on the turf at Philly. And the MTOs came out, as did Spun to Run. So Gonzalez was playing possum. He was, not Gonzalez, Guerrero, just in case it came off. The racing office will yell at him. Thanks to Tommy Ventura, Dick Powell, Andy Serling, Gory Smith, John White. And I guess that was our lineup. Talk to you in the morning.